This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Uplift Desk. In today's work environment, it's essential to find balance and promote well-being, and Uplift Desk is here to make that a reality. With a focus on ergonomics and innovative design, Uplift Desk offers standing desks that not only encourage healthier work habits, but also enhance your overall productivity. Each desk is built with unmatched stability and quality, ensuring that your workspace is both dynamic and durable. The beauty of Uplift Desk lies in its extensive customization options, allowing you to select from a vast array of desktops and accessories to fit your specific work needs and aesthetic preferences. Additionally, Uplift Desk is committed to customer satisfaction, offering fast shipping, free returns, and a 15-year warranty. Transform your office and your health by visiting UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting for 5% off your order. That's UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting to get 5% off your entire order. With Uplift Desk, you're not just investing in a piece of furniture, you're investing in a healthier, more productive future. Again, go to UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting to get 5% off your order today.
Hi, I'm Cameron Harold. I'm about to have a productive conversation with Mike Vardy.
Welcome to A Productive Conversation. It's Mike Vardy once again, and I'm joined by a fellow Canadian, but not hanging out in Canada nearly as much any longer, Cameron Harold. He is returning to the podcast. This time, we're going to talk about the idea of the second command, including his book, The Second in Command. Now, Cameron is the mastermind behind hundreds of companies' exponential growth and has earned his reputation as the business growth guru. He's built a dynamic consultancy with clients that include a monarchy and a big four wireless company. Impressive stuff. He's the author of four books, and Cameron is also a top-rated international speaker, having spoken on all seven continents. He's the founder of the COO Alliance, which, again, relates directly to what we're going to be talking about today. It's the world's leading network for seconds in command. He's also the host of The Second in Command, the Chief Behind the Chief podcast, where he interviews COOs and other seconds to share their insights with his listeners. We touch on that. We touch on the whole idea behind a second in command. We even tap into my needs for a second in command and how maybe I'm on the path to that at this point. If I'm going to learn from somebody, I'm glad I'm going to learn from Cameron. And you're going to learn a lot too. Here's my conversation with Cameron Harold. Enjoy. Cameron, thanks once again for joining me on the program. You last time we spoke, you were like across the pond. Now you're like across the world in a completely different location, which I'm sure we'll get to as we make our way through. Thanks for taking the time to join me today.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
So the book is called The Second in Command, Unleash the Power of Your COO. And before we even hit record, we were talking about the book writing process and what that's like. You've written, this is your sixth book, right? And I've had a couple that I've been working on over, you know, I've had some come out. I've got one that's coming out in the not too distant future. But what you said to me that this you feel is your best book yet.
And by a long shot.
Yeah. By a long shot. So Why do you think that is? Because your other books are good. I mean, they're great. I mean, I've read your other, but there's something when an author says that piques my interest. I think I have an idea why, but I want to hear it from you.
Okay. Yeah. So I never set out to be an author in the first place. 11 years ago, my clients and speakers bureaus asked me to put up my first book, Double Double. So I worked really hard and I pushed that book out, and it was hard. And I was happy with it. I was proud of it and it was good. And it's done extraordinarily well. I still make really good money off it every month, and it's being used all over the world. And then a few of my other books were more opportunistic in a way. Like there was a need for them, but it wasn't a massive path. You know, Meeting Suck was done and easy and out the door, and 3PR, same thing. The Miracle Morning for Entrepreneurs, I co-authored with Hal Elrod, and that was, you know, him asking me to do it, and we did a good job and pushed it out, and it's great as well. Vivid Vision was one where there was a lot of demand for, and I saw an opportunity to really probably drive a core purpose for myself, which was really to help these entrepreneurial organizations globally because they were missing it. But then The Second in Command was all new content that I'd never really talked about before, and it was deeply experiential. I was going into the fact that I'd played The Second in Command a few different times. And I've been running the CLO Alliance. I've got deep, you know, IP now of working with 170 CLOs from 17 countries. And then I've got this podcast called the Second in Command podcast, where I've interviewed 240 CLOs. So all of a sudden I was like stumbling around with this deep IP, these industry connections, and the fact that I actually wanted to talk about it. So I just really worked hard at it and pulled it out. And what came out was something I'm really, really happy with.
Well, and the reason I thought that is because it's such top of mind present, like it's where you're at now too. Do you know what I mean? Like, like you're so in it, right? Like you said, experiential.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I'm definitely like right in the middle of it. And it's something that 6 years ago when I started the CLO Alliance, I started it because it was a bit of a blue ocean. You know, no one was doing anything in the CLO space. Everybody was targeting entrepreneurs. And I had been the CLO and felt a little bit like the ugly stepchild, right? Where it was like, why doesn't somebody want to have, like, I want different discussions than just being with entrepreneurs all day. So yeah, I guess 6 years of doing that has given me that experience in that space. And then now it seems like anytime anybody mentions CLO, they're pointing a finger going, talk to Cameron. So I guess the timing of it just worked. But yeah, it wasn't because of that. It was just more, there was this need to actually get it out. And I was also frankly tired of having one-on-one conversations with everybody, teaching them how to recruit a CEO, how to onboard a CEO, how to build a relationship. Like, fuck, I have all these ideas. I'm like, can I just give them to you here? So I just kind of codified it and did that. And there's nothing out there really on it.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the book. Yeah. That people wanted a Cameron, you know, like they wanted, they needed a Cameron. And you're right. Like it's interesting because the last time we had a conversation, we touched on this a bit. We didn't really dive into it as deeply because this book wasn't out yet, you know, Second in Command wasn't, but we were talking about it a bit. And it's funny when you spend enough time in a space and you've been a COO, not just been a CEO, but you've been teaching people how to, and diving deep into it. It's not just tactical. And that's what I found when I was going through the book. There is a philosophical element to the book that, to me, that came across because of the fact that you've spent so much time in the space. You were able to kind of extract and distill some of the conceptions that are out there about a COO, and then some of them one that might be misconceptions, maybe the evolving role. Mm-hmm. I know you bring up Gino Wickman in the book and the idea of what maybe a COO was, but maybe it's not entirely that. Like, how much of that did you feel as you were going through the process of writing the book was, this is something that I have to kind of share what the COO experience is, not just what it was, but what it is now and what it has the potential to be for you?
Yeah, there was a huge part of that. And it started, you're right, in the writing process, because I didn't realize that I had a lot of the feelings that started to come out in the book as I started writing it. But as an example, so yeah, I talked about Gino Wickman with Traction and Rocket Fuel, and they talk about the visionary and the integrator. That's typically like a 10 to 50 person company. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the ideas of what an integrator is really break down when you get into a company that's mid-sized in the 50 to 500 range. When you actually have a real COO or a VP of operations, and they're dealing with strategy and cross-functional decision-making and teams, and you know, they're not the tiebreaker, they're having to build consensus. And so just wanting to kind of demystify that a little bit. And then also, I thought I knew the COO role quite well, you know, when I was one, and now I realize I would be incapable of being a COO for 90% of my COO Alliance members. And they would have been incapable of being one for me. So it really started to show me how complicated the role is, which is probably why so many CEOs struggle with, how do I find one, and what am I looking for? And it's so different for everybody.
You mentioned Shopify and Harley, who comes up, because Harley, when I interviewed him years ago for a different podcast, he was CFO. I believe he was the CFO at the time. And he then became, he is now the COO. And you, and you mentioned in the story, you mentioned the book, you know, how that happened. There are different, you know, when people are thinking about the idea of what is a COO, you break some of that down. Harley was an example of the MVP, I believe, right? Was he not?
Yeah, I think he was the MVP for Tobias, where Tobias was very inward facing, kind of product tech. Harley was like this outward facing, gregarious biz dev MVP role. And it was like, the only way I can keep him is to handcuff him into the COO role and let him grow. And sure enough, you know, he did. I remember meeting them when they were 50 employees total at the company at Shopify. And I was in their offices in Ottawa, and I was spellbound by Harley, even though they were a 50 person company. So you could see it, right? He had that special something. In other companies, the CEO was very inward facing, very quiet, very analytical. Eric Church, who's the current COO at 1-800-GOT-JUNK, will never speak to the media, won't do press events, won't do speaking events. Like, he's very inward, process focused, and building a, you know, they're now a $500 million company. Totally different roles, and yet they have the same title.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, as you talk about one of the things you said in the book, which this totally speaks to, is the COO has to be great at whatever the CEO sucks at. Again, it's like the yin and yang, and which is on the cover of the book. And, you know, as I've been growing my business, and we're not at a high, necessarily a massive scale to a degree, but we are growing, is there's things I've recognized as the CEO, for lack of a better term, that I needed somebody to handle that stuff, even though, and we did touch on this in our last conversation, I have been an operations manager before, back when I worked for the Victoria Film Festival.
Sure.
Interestingly, you said that you don't feel you could be a COO now. Do you think that you've become a CEO to COOs to a degree?
It's not that I couldn't be a COO now. It's I couldn't be a COO for many companies because I don't fit the DNA of that company. Mm-hmm. If I found a company that was entrepreneurial, 50 employees and wanted to go to 500, you know, needed some of the magic around culture and execution and operations and people and growth and scale and PR, fuck it, I could dive in and ignite it and run it and grow it. And then I would break down again at the 500 to 1,000 employee mark when politics creep in and when we're dealing with all that. It's just knowing your zone, knowing your space that you're in. It's also why I called the book The Second in Command instead of something with COO in the title.
Right.
Because in some cases, your second in command is a director of operations. I just interviewed the second in command for a company today. They've raised $140 million in the last 14 months. And he's the chief legal officer, but he runs people, IT, engineering, finance. He doesn't run finance. He runs operations and legal. He's the most businessy business guy I've ever met. And yet he's also a lawyer. It blew me away.
This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Shopify. Dreaming of starting your own business or looking to take your current one to the next level? Shopify is here to make that dream a reality. As the leading e-commerce platform, Shopify empowers you to start, grow, and manage your business with ease. From setting up your online store to scaling globally, Shopify provides all the tools you need to succeed in the marketplace. Customize your storefront, manage your inventory, and connect with your customers all in one place. With direct-to-consumer pricing, same-day shipping, and a global community of entrepreneurs, Shopify supports your journey at every step. Are you ready to transform your business idea into a success story? Visit shopify.com/timecrafting to start your free trial and embark on your entrepreneurial journey with Shopify. That's shopify.com/timecrafting to start your free trial. Do it today. This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Prolon. If you've ever considered fasting for its health benefits but can't face the idea of days without food, Prolon offers a novel solution. It's a nutrition program that simulates the effects of fasting while allowing you to eat. Developed by scientists at the USC Longevity Institute, Prolon supports weight management, enhances physical performance, and bolsters gut health through a meticulously crafted 5-day meal program. This isn't just another diet. It's a lifestyle change backed by Nobel Prize-winning research, designed to trigger cellular rejuvenation and promote overall well-being. I can't wait to put it through the paces. The meals, ranging from savory soups to nutritious snacks, are all designed to ensure your body achieves a fasting state with the energy you need to maintain your daily routine. Prolon is convenient, providing everything in a single box delivered to your doorstep. I am anxiously awaiting mine. I encourage you to check out Prolon as well. If you're ready to see how Prolon can change the way you think about fasting and nutrition, then right now, Prolon is offering A Productive Conversation listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. Go to prolonlife.com/timecrafting. That's prolonlife.com/timecrafting for this special offer. Head over to prolonlife.com/timecrafting to get started today. This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by 1Password. Imagine a world where forgetting passwords is no longer a hassle and your digital security is uncompromised. 1Password offers a robust, intuitive solution to manage all your passwords with just one master password, safeguarding your information across every device. This isn't just any password manager. It's a comprehensive security tool that encrypts your data, ensuring only you have access. With 1Password, you can generate strong, unique passwords for each of your accounts, store sensitive information securely, and even share important logins with family or colleagues safely. Recognized by Wirecutter as the top pick for password managers, 1Password is the preferred choice for enhancing your online security without the complexity. Enhance your digital security by visiting 1Password.com. And we have a special offer for listeners of A Productive Conversation. Right now, listeners of A Productive Conversation get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/productive convo. That's 2 free weeks at 1Password.com/productive convo. 1Password.com/productive convo. Check out what 1Password can do for you, your business, and even your family today.
When do you know when it's time to get a COO on board? Like, I mean, again, I'm at that point now where they're not at that COO level, but I brought somebody on who's handling, like, specializing in operations and community. Like, they're really good at those jobs. And I mean, I know, kind of like we were talking about with Harley, like, if I want to keep that person, eventually I'm going to have to get them to that level, which means we're going to have to grow at that level, which ironically they're going to be helping me get to anyway. So when do you know it's time as a CEO to go, I need a COO. I need a second in command.
So the when you need the second in command tends to be when you don't have enough time in the day to grow the people that are reporting to you, to really oversee the business areas that are reporting to you, to actually care about the business areas that are reporting to you more than the 30 minutes a week that you're giving them in your one-on-one, right? Like, if you're running so ragged and you're so busy that you only have 30 minutes a week to give to your direct reports, you need a second in command so that you can spend time with them, brainstorm with them, remove obstacles for them, mentor them, grow them, align them, help recruit, help kind of be strategic with them. That's really what I notice, is that that's the opportunity for scale, right? A leader's core job is to grow people, not to do work.
Right. It's okay. So now I'm going to lean towards the person who is struggling to make that shift. So
yeah.
Let's say I know this guy named Mark, but it's not me. And they're looking
at this guy named Mike Vardy.
Yeah, this guy named Mark Vardy, which often is how I'm mispronounced anyways. And so, you know, you've got your setup, you've got your tactical tools in place, like ClickUp or what have you. You're going through it and you see the stuff that's there. And, you know, this goes back to delegation, which I know we've touched on before. But the idea of, like, oh, well, there's this. I'll give you a very specific example. There's this course that we're dripping out, and the course needs to be released manually because the tool we're using doesn't necessarily schedule it yet. So I see it sitting there and I'm like, I should do this, but I know it's not that's an operational thing, not something I should be spending my time on. So
yeah,
for somebody who is, they know that they're at that point, and believe me, we're shifting in that direction for sure. How does someone prepare for that? How does someone prepare to let go of that stuff? And focus on the thing, the vision, the things that only really they can do in the role that they have.
So great question. And it's by focusing on the core things, which is, so your job is to delegate stuff and get it off your plate, right? The fear is always, oh, if I delegate it, they don't know how to do it, or I can probably do it better, or it's easier for me to do it. Yeah, but that doesn't scale.
Right.
So what you want to do is delegate it to someone and then grow them so they have the capacity, the skills and the confidence to do it, so you can delegate more to them. They don't have to be full-time people either. Mm-hmm. You can delegate projects to people who are experts in certain areas until you have enough projects that they're doing that it fills up their week and they need to become full-time with you. So we're in an era now where you can actually delegate to freelancers and to kind of fractional experts. The key, though, is are you good at delegation? Are you good at project management? Are you good at time management? Are you good at coaching and situational leadership? Do you have those core skills as a leader? And if you can work on those as a CEO and get your leadership team to be good in those skills, that helps you scale as well.
Let's dive into the fractional part a bit more. I've got a friend of mine who is a fractional CMO, and I'm like, and I looked at him like, that's an interesting, I've not, I mean, I've heard the term, but I've not seen it applied. So for somebody who, because, you know, again, if they're just starting to feel the pull of this, well, can we dive into the fractional component a little bit?
Yeah, I'll give you a really good example. So let's say that you're a company and you have a $500,000 marketing budget for the year, okay, 40 grand a month. You probably have $140,000 director of marketing overseeing it for you. So now you're down to spending $360,000. You got $140,000 spent person spending it. They may not have the real strategic insights to actually understand marketing. But if you paid a fractional CMO 50 grand a year, now you'd only have $310,000 to spend, but you might get way more leverage, right? Or the fractional CMO might show you three or four freelancers and contractors you can use who can knock the cover off the ball, and they could manage three or four freelancers and you wouldn't need the $140,000 babysitter. So it just becomes another potential way. So as an example, I have a fractional CMO working with me who's overseeing our fleet of all the marketing. Now we've got a podcast expert, we've got a YouTube expert, we've got an email marketing expert, a social media team. That's it on the marketing side. And then we have like our podcast and our sales and biz dev people. But Matt is really there kind of quarterback. And then I've got a website guy who does all my websites and landing pages. Mm-hmm. But Matt is sitting there in the fractional role overseeing stuff and giving me these insights that I never would have even known what to look for.
Yeah. Right? Yep. And that's exactly that's the role I'm seeing for me right now. Yeah. Go ahead.
And I couldn't afford to have him full time. Yeah. I couldn't afford to pay him 250 grand a year. But for 50 grand a year, it's irresponsible not to have them.
Yep. Yeah. And it's funny because that's literally when I got the email, like, Cameron's got a new book coming out. I'm like, okay, good, because this is perfectly timed for me, especially because we're in that fractional phase right now. It seems to be the smart play for where I'm at. And I know that there's other, especially people who listen to this podcast, they may not have those budgets. They may not have that scale yet, right?
I think for most people, we make the mistake of saying, like, I need to get a bunch of tasks done. I'll hire a person. Well, do those tasks involve 40 or 50 hours a week for the next 52 weeks? Probably not. So maybe you really don't need a full-time person, because then what happens is you kind of needed them part-time, but now you got them full-time. So then you start including them in projects and doing shit that you don't really need to get done. That's really where the lever or the leverage comes from, right? Is getting the ROI right on your people, time, and money.
Let's get into the hiring process. You talk about especially in the onset of the book, the idea of when Brian, who also has been on the show before, when he hired you, you were best friends, right? And then, yeah. And then the second hire. Yeah. The second hire, different experience. Third hire is Eric, right? So can someone go from just get it right out of the gate? Or do they need to have some growing pains along the way? And should they expect it?
Great question. So Brian had an unfair advantage with me. 3 months before I joined him as his COO, he was my best man at my wedding. So we were in a mastermind group, an EO forming group for 4.5 years. So he watched me build two other companies over 4.5 years. So it's almost like he had a job interview watching me, knew me culturally, knew he got along and trusted me. Day one, it was like, here's the keys to the business. Let's grow this. Yeah. So that was easy, right? Until it got really big. Once it was at about 3,000 employees, 100 million in size, it was too big for me. I was kind of pulling my hair. Brian asked me to step aside. We both cried. A year later, he brings in the former president of Starbucks US. I thought it was a spectacular hire. Turns out she was the wrong culture fit, too corporate. It didn't really fit in. The market was collapsing with the 08 financial crisis. So all the shit hit the fan. So she was gone after a year. Took him another year and he brought in Eric Church. Eric and I have known each other since 1987. Now, this is going to blow your mind. In September of 1987 at Carleton University in Ottawa, Eric and I started the very first fraternity in the city of Ottawa together called Acacia. I was president the first year. Eric was president the second year. How weird is that? But he's now the COO at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. He's been there from that 80 million, because it went from 106 million down to 80 million. He's grown it from 80 million to about $450 million right now. But he would have been a horrible COO for the first 6.5 years because he had no franchising experience. He hadn't done the PR stuff. He didn't have the right culture fit. He was more of a corporate guy, a bigger picture guy, more strategic. I was horrible for the next phase, he would have been horrible. So it's a timing thing as well as a skill set and culture thing, right?
It sounds like, to a degree, and I'll bring a sports metaphor in here, is that it's like the shelf life of a coach to a degree can take place here, right? Is that like, so as a, yeah. I mean, you can see this right now, but nobody else can. I'm a Cincinnati Bengals fan, right?
Okay.
Which is good now. For years, it was not good, but now it's good. And so you watch like a guy like Marvin Lewis, who was in there, who was a great, like he was great with players, so on and so forth, but he couldn't get them over the hump. They made the playoffs like 6 years in a row. They couldn't win a game. They let him go finally after some disappointment because you eventually plateau, right? And then,
sure.
What I find interesting is that plateaus ultimately generally turn to downgrade. Like it just starts to slide, right? So, and then they brought in Zach Taylor, who for the first couple of years struggled, but then, you know, once he had found his footing, things have taken off. They made it to the Super Bowl last year. So the CEO is like the owner. They're there. They're, you know, the only way they're not there really is if there's a board and there's a whole bunch of other things that can happen there. But I'm wondering, do you think that there's some commonality between, like, especially when it comes to the COO role, that there is, don't necessarily hang your hat on as this is a, quote, lifetime or et cetera, like long time appointment?
You need them for a reason or a season or a reason to something or a season? It's kind of like that because there is a time that that person is great for and then there's the next phase. Interestingly, though, you mentioned that the CEO is kind of always just there. One of the problems that Brian had with my replacement was Brian moved himself out of the business and kind of abdicated it and handed it over and really wasn't there. So the cultural fabric got destroyed because he was the strong cultural fabric. He was this cultural DNA. He was the special something. And people were craving that. And then when this corporate person came in and wasn't the entrepreneurial blue wigs, you know, loving the franchisees, it fucked the fabric up. And that's what really caused some problems, as well as a timing issue, right? With the whole, you know, global financial crisis of the 08-09 era. So then Brian comes back in, kind of like Howard Schultz coming back into Starbucks, then brings the right CIO for that right stage in, and they become these two guys who really give a shit about each other, build a great friendship together, and off it goes again, right?
It's like what just happened with Disney with Bob Iger coming back.
Yes,
same thing, very similar, right? You've got, because Chapek was really good at books and cutting numbers, like, but sucked with people, just sucked with culture, right? When I worked for Costco, Jim Sinegal was the CEO. He was the guy. He has since retired. They brought somebody else on, and I can tell you that I still have connections there. It's like, it's not the same company. There's some changes. There's some stuff that's happened. And it's interesting because I think, do you find that a CEO, and I mean, we're sidetracking here a little bit. When a new CEO comes in, are they more apt to bring in a new COO, or is there a trial where they try to bridge it, or like, do they seem to go, it can seem to go hand in hand in some ways?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to have to kind of take a pass on this. I can give you my thoughts on it.
Sure, but
I
let's
don't
go
have
with
the research of the data.
Yeah, let's go with
My thoughts would be that it would probably be lucky if it works out, because you're looking for two things. The person who's great at the stuff that you're not. Mm-hmm. So that would imply that the new CEO is great at all the stuff the old CEO is great at. Secondly, you're looking for that real strong cultural DNA. And that means that all of a sudden, the new one just happens to fit perfectly with the other one. It's like, how does that work, right?
It's like the general manager and a coach, right? Like, it's like in sports. It's like, if there's a new general manager, there's a good chance the coach is not long for this world because the general manager wants to bring in his own people or what have you, or vice versa. In football, it works the other way.
Yeah, or like your ex doesn't probably go and just date one person and you're off. Like there's usually, you know what I mean? Like there's a fit period. You have to get super lucky with the fit. It's also because that's why I did the yin and yang on the front cover of the book. I think it's the most important of the CEO relationships. You know, you can get lots of CFOs, you can get lots of heads of IT, you can get lots of heads of marketing, but the person that bridges the gap across all the functional areas, the person that is there kind of behind the scenes telling the CEO where they're fucking up, like it's a really, really different role.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I want to touch on briefly the idea of onboarding, because I think that's where things can fall apart, right? Like unless it's done properly. Can you share a couple of insights you reveal some in the book, obviously, and I want people to pick up the book, so I don't want to go into too much detail, but the idea of we've got the COO, we want to bring them on board, but we want to bring them on board in the right way. You know, I think of like Chip and Dan Heath's book, The Power of Moments, when someone goes to work for John Deere and they're like, that first day is like, oh my God, I feel like, this is an amazing thing. How do you cultivate that when you're doing the onboarding process for a COO? Can you?
Huge question. Great question. I've spent a lot of time with a number of my guests on the Second in Command podcast asking this, because often they get brought into the company when there's already 400 people there. And they're the new COO coming in, and people are like, well, who the hell are you? And, you know, what gives you the right to make these decisions? And I wanted that job, and I'm kind of pissed that you got it. So it's almost like the first 30 days that they show up, it's all about just asking questions, getting to know people, getting to know the culture, making zero decisions, just meeting people, getting to know people, getting to like people, and taking pages and pages of notes of things that you think you might want to change, and you change nothing. In the next 30 days, so month two, it's kind of about testing your hypotheses. It's like, I think I should fire that person. Let me go and check. Oh, shit, I was wrong. They turn out to be a star. I think I should fire that person. Yep, turns out I might be right. I think I should put, you know, so you're all testing hypotheses in the second month. And then in month three, you've probably gained enough trust. You've probably got enough traction. You've probably built enough consensus with teams that you can start bringing some of your old people, you know, people in, and you can start getting rid of some of the old people. The hard part is when you're coming into a wartime situation where you have to make moves quickly.
Right.
That's really tough, right? Or, you know, like it's in a growth period, or you're just doing an acquisition, or the company's going public, or the CEO gets hit by a car and is dead. Like,
that's a cultural shift that can take place.
Yeah, and that's tough when the CEO has to come into that. So there's I think it's why the CEO has to be so good at all the people side of the business. They have to be the chameleon. They have to be able to build relationships. They have to be very high in introspection and their interpersonal relationships, because they're the connection of all of this. They're the glue.
So I got a couple more questions before we wrap up. First one is, you are clearly the CEO of your brand, the work you do now, obviously, right?
Yeah.
Which means you're not the COO, or are you?
Yeah.
How hard is it for you not to be the COO, knowing full well that that's kind of where you've been, you know, dwelling, and you know a lot about it? Again, that idea of expertise, it can lend itself, either it can leverage itself, or it can land you in hot water, I would imagine.
Well, so the business that I'm running is a small business now, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it has large scope, and then I've got members from 17 countries, but we're a 10-person team.
Yeah.
So it's not hard to manage a 10-person team. For me, when I was 20 years old, I had 12 full-time employees already.
Yep.
So I started running my first business, College Pro Painters, in 1986, right? So I was an entrepreneur, and then I'd coached 120 entrepreneurs by 1994. So I had been in this strange space of being an entrepreneur, coaching entrepreneurs, and all of them in the whole 10 to 20 person stage. So this is my sweet spot in terms of, it's easy, it's fun, it's like, to scale it out to something really, really big, to like maybe the size of a big, you know, 20,000 person organization, you know, we'll need to bring on the proper professional services team.
Do you think that wisdom, patience, those soft skills are underrated and undervalued in the role of a COO? Because I could think that ego everybody has it, might get the better of some people, but I mean, I imagine that wisdom and maturity is like formidable assets for the COO to have.
I think they're formidable assets right now for any leader to have. And I think we're noticing an awful lot of the very young leaders that have really strong tech skills and a lot of confidence, but they don't actually have the street smarts of having done it yet. And all of a sudden they get into these situations where they're way over their head, and they don't know how to work it, right? And they're maxing out a little bit on stress. So I think we're seeing a little bit of that. Now we're going to grow through in the next 5 to 10 years as these 30-year-olds become 40, right? Or as these 35-year-olds become 45. But yeah, I think there is something there. I believe that there's a strong opportunity to mentor everybody, right? That I had mentors my entire career. When I was the COO at 1-800-GOT-JUNK, I was being groomed by the COO at Starbucks. We were meeting every single month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think mentorship is highly undervalued, and people don't make time for it when they should. More people that need it. And then the people that, I mean, I'm more than willing. I know that once you get to a certain age, I think it just becomes something that you want to do. It's a way to give back, right?
Yeah, it feels, well, it also feels good to be needed as we get older, right? Yeah. Like our kids are growing up, like there's something that feels good. And I recognize that I would never be in my career without some of the people that really mentored me.
Absolutely. It's funny. My daughter, literally this morning before we hit record, she goes, "Dad, here's my grad photos," because she's graduating high school this year. And I look at the photos and she looks amazing. I'm like, oh my God, yeah, it's almost time. This phase of life is, she's going to be traveling, like you're gallivanting right now. She'll be doing that starting in October. She's taking a gap year and going all over the place. So it's like, but we are making her watch Taken before she does.
Nice.
Last question. And in the book you have, you know, the appendix, one of the things I found, I mean, you've got a lot of resources in there, but I want to touch on the podcast, the Second in Command podcast. And sure. This is going to, you may have to rack your brain a bit for this, but can you think of maybe one or two conversations that you had that were like that kind of, I wouldn't say flip the script for you, but really were like, oh, like they were kind of eye-opening to a degree where it's like, I've never thought about it that way. Or this is something, yeah, I think more people need to know because I've not been relating this.
I'll give one that comes to mind really quickly. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could remember Matt's last name. I think it's Rollins, who is the COO of Rippling. And larger organization, tech companies, Bay Area, VC funded, former entrepreneur who became a COO for his best friend. He created something called the operating manual for Mount. It's the operating manual to him. Mm-hmm. He wrote this 3 or 4 page manual on how he ticks, what pisses him off, what turns him on, what gets him angry, what gets him excited, how to have meetings with him, how to communicate with him, how not to communicate with him, how to ask him a question, when to leave him alone. And he literally wrote this manual and he gives it to every single employee on day one. I'm like, that's amazing. Like, what a way to fast forward the entire organization. I just thought that was such a really cool thing.
That's an exercise in vulnerability, like a big exercise in vulnerability to a degree. I mean, obviously you're setting boundaries and expectations, but I mean, you're saying stuff in there that like this person's brand new. You're putting all your cards out on the table, right?
Yeah, it's vulnerability and it's introspection. It's, yeah, somebody who actually realizes, hey, I tick this way. I should let people know I tick this way so that we can get in sync faster. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to change.
Sure.
Maybe I can adapt a little bit. So that was one. Another one that I've really noticed, and I don't know if it's flipped the switch, but it's just become painfully obvious. As a company scales, it's impossible for a COO to really know what's going on with everything. And there's an ability to release from that and release from the need to be on top of everything and realize that your core roles are to align people and to grow people. And you see these, I see these COOs that I interview when my perception would be like, gosh, you must be like going crazy trying to run this huge company. And they're like, yeah, no, it's pretty good. Like, I've got good balance. I'm doing this. I'm doing, like, how do you, well, because they realize the span of what they should focus on, and it's people.
Cameron, this has been great. I'm glad that we had the chance to have this conversation. The book is called The Second in Command, Unleash the Power of Your COO. Where can people pick up the book and where can they keep up with you and your work?
Yeah, that little bookstore called Amazon is where I focused everything now. All my books are available on Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. Check out the investinyourleaders.com for my course content. And then the Second Fan podcast is great.
Again, thanks for having a productive conversation with me today.
You're welcome. Thank you, Mark.
Big thanks to Cameron for joining me on the program today. You can check out all the links and every other helpful thing we discussed at productivityist.com/podcast459. And by the way, while you're listening to this on the device you're listening, you can subscribe to the podcast. That's a really easy way to support the show. Make sure you don't miss a single episode of what's to come. Just hit the subscribe button. And by the way, the other way you can support the show, which I'd love for you to do, is to check out the sponsors that you heard during today's episode. Just visit productivityist.com/podcast sponsors to make that happen as well. That's it for today. Thanks again for joining me this time around. Until next time, I'm Mike Vardy, the host of A Productive Conversation, reminding you, stop doing productive and start being productive. See you later.